This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lichwe Lin. Tonight, we're marking World Health Day.
First, we look at our current healthcare systems and policies, the lessons we've learned over the last 2 years, and what we should be focusing on. And then we talk about the importance of health literacy when it comes to making decisions on medical care.
Tell us, do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07 and today is World Health Day. And this year's theme is Our Planet, Our Health. So that essentially focuses on paying global attention to keeping humans and the planet healthy, at least according to the WHO. So we thought it'd be a good opportunity to sort of extend that theme and discuss healthcare systems, knowledge about health, particularly within the context of the last 2 years we've had.
So I want to acknowledge that we've talked about our healthcare system quite a lot, but today seemed like a good time to take stock, right? We are newly in the endemic phase. It has been a kind of very hard-fought process even to get there. And as we've been saying a lot, the pandemic has shown us a number of things about our healthcare system that work and that perhaps need a little bit of brushing up or a little bit of bolstering, right? And some of the things that have come up included things like funding. It includes things like our preparedness for a situation like the pandemic, or for that matter, our preparedness for the ways in which our healthcare might change depending on the climate and what it does, what it says, our preparedness for emergencies. And because of that, also how we've been treating our doctors. I think there's just been a lot of healthcare related headlines that we wanted to kind of combine. And like I said, a report card, perhaps a report card of sorts.
Now, if we were to look at the theme, making that connection between the environment, the world and health, the health minister's statement on today essentially focused on some of those. So he wrote a column together with Tan Sri Dr. Jamila Mohamad, who's executive director of Sunway Centre for Planetary Health. And they talked about things like the floods and how those then result in illnesses and injuries. They also made links between extreme heat and the risk of cardiovascular complications, and also mental health, as well as the impact on mental health by things like climate change, existential anxiety, the pandemic, and so on. And so, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. Now, according to Kyrie, the COVID-19 immunization program was actually among the first to go green when it came to our health initiatives. And this seems to be something that they want to consider across the board as well. But this is coming on the wake, of course, of statements from him as well on the fact that our healthcare system is chronically underinvested in. So the push and pull of that, I think, is something that's quite interesting to talk about.
Especially in light of the fact that there's going to be a white paper, right? Which also means that there are opportunities to take a look at, well, you know, ways in which we could increase that going green or becoming increasingly sustainable, reducing medical waste, which is very difficult to deal with. And also that idea of investing in healthcare, because of course, all of this is going to take investment, and that is ignoring or not accounting for all the other things that already need investing in, whether it is a shoring up of our services across the nation, you know, in terms of making sure that our hospitals are well equipped, the distribution of healthcare providers around the country is also more equitable. You know, there are all these things that are important to focus on and that frankly need money to do. And so what the white paper, I think everybody is looking forward to what the white paper is going to suggest, put forward, and how it's going to shape the way we think about and spend on healthcare in the future.
So that's from the systems point of view, right? And things that we need to have in place. But if we go down to the individual level and care, I think one aspect that is worth looking at within the context of today is this issue of health literacy. Or more specifically, how well equipped are we to access information on health and use that information to be able to advocate for ourselves? And there are a number of studies that have circled this. Largely speaking, Malaysians are relatively okay. We have sufficient knowledge when it comes to health. However, there are many ways in which we could be doing better. And I think this is particularly important. Again, post-pandemic, because I think we see the ways in which lack of information, misinformation actually leads to very real complications in terms of the choices people might make in their healthcare or even how they might make decisions or influence other people.
Yes, and the ways in which this kind of knowledge is communicated and communicated in a way that is appealing, relatable, understandable. I think all of these things are tremendously important, especially also because I think we do have to say that we can't talk about this without addressing the elephant in the room of misinformation, of the spread of the really widespread issue of people just getting the wrong idea of social media and WhatsApp. So all of that is what we're going to discuss later.
So after this, we'll be joined by Associate Professor Dr. Farhan Rusli, Public Health Medicine Specialist, who will be speaking to us about really our healthcare systems and what else we need to be looking at. But we would like to hear from you. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're observing World Health Day. We're doing a number of things. But first, we are going to look at our healthcare systems. Lessons we've learned, room for improvement. We would like to hear from you on the issue of health literacy. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Associate Professor Dr. Farhan Rusli, Public Health Medicine Specialist. Dr. Farhan, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
So, over the course of the pandemic, our healthcare system and frontliners clearly were heavily strained. What existing issues did the pandemic bring to the surface?
I think one of the key things that the pandemic showed were cracks that were already present in the system. And one of the biggest things that you see is the poor management of the human resources. I think that's key. You hear about the overbloating of the civil service, but yet when you talk about the healthcare sector, you keep hearing that there's not enough doctors and not enough nurses and all these things. And you talk about the workers are overstrained. So that's where I think one of the biggest issues that the resulting pandemic showed was that we need to be more effective in management of our human resource, actually, especially in healthcare.
So if we asked you, right, to give our healthcare system a grade A to F, where would it land?
I'll give it a D for donkey. Yeah, so I think that's the grade that's probably suitable for it, because you have to look at it from a bigger aspect, which means that the healthcare is a whole system. You're not talking about just one aspect. A lot of people usually associate healthcare with whatever they get in hospital care, that they've gone to this ward or they've gotten through surgery and all these things. And trust me, believe me, we have the best surgeons in the world. I'm very comfortable to say that we have the best clinicians. But at the same time, healthcare is not only about clinical practice, it's also about public health aspects as well. And we have severely undermined and underfunded this sector of the healthcare system. And that's why Malaysia has always been a nation that is on curative aspects rather than preventive. And that's where we have landed where we are now.
So if we can expand on that, what are some of the things that we do very well? And conversely, what are the things, what are the areas that need significant improvement?
Well, we do really well when we're faced with a problem. The thing with Malaysians, and I think with the rest of the world, is that we love to tackle a problem head on. And we fail to see that instead of trying to solve problems when they come, we should actually be moving towards preventing problems before they arise. So this is on a wider scope as well. When you talk about healthcare, you're talking about the environment, you're talking about obesity. So instead of trying to tell people, campaign, jump, say hard, let's get fit and all these things, and have the title of being the fattest in Southeast Asia, what we should be thinking is about what are the programs or what are the developments that we should do for the next generation. Now, the pandemic has also showed us that a lot of the problems and deaths actually occurred among a lot of the NCDs, non-communicable diseases, people with hypertension, diabetes, and heart issues. And these were the people who were dying. These are the people that are still dying and brought in dead to the hospital. So you see that we need to be spending more on things. And the thing with public healthcare expenditure is that it's not popular with politicians because you don't see results. You don't see results in five-year election cycles. It's generations. It's 20, 30 years down the line. And I think this is where we should put our focus on.
While you're bringing up funding, right, I wanted to look at some of the specific points of interest that have come up. And this issue of chronic underinvestment is one that has been highlighted recently, came up in Parliament. What have been the ramifications of this lack of funding?
Well, the lack of funding is what I just said earlier, right? We've been the most obese. I had just recently had a talk with one of a very pronounced consultant, heart consultant, where he says that in Australia, they don't talk about people having any sort of heart disease 50 years and below. While in Malaysia, that the number of cases that are coming in are hurting people who are 15 years younger than the normal worldwide average. And this is because of the easy access to mediators such as smoking, such as cigarettes, such as drugs and all these other things, whereby it's easily accessible. So the ramifications are very, very severe, because if we want to start thinking and we want to start doing things with outcome-based, with translatable actions, which means that you have to look at it, what are the main causes? And we have to be extremely diligent in what we want to do. Let me give you an example, a very short one. If we think that sugar is making us obese, why are we still having a lot of AP on sugars? Why are we still having heavily subsidizing sugars? Why are we still giving a lot of people easy access to sugar when we know that this is actually not helping people? Right. So what is it that we're trying to achieve? And that's why when you talk about ramifications, it's not just about the healthcare ministry or the Ministry of Health. It's a total policy overhaul. And whatever healthcare reform that we want to plan for the next 3-4 decades or so, it needs to be on a whole plane. And it needs to have key stakeholders and players from all ministries to be on board. So that's only then we can actually have any sort of change that we want to accomplish.
Now, if we look at this issue of underfunding across the board, are there particular groups or parts of the country that are more impacted by this than others?
Well, of course, if you touch on these things about underfunding, right, a lot of problems when you talk about NCDs and issues like this, a lot of obesity, a lot of the issues actually happen in our urban poor. So when you talk about underfunding, let's just take a place like Subang Jaya, okay? We're not trying to pick sides here, but Subang Jaya, with a population of X amount, thousands and tens of thousands of people, does not have one single clinic kesihatan, which is a health district clinic in it. It doesn't have a dedicated hospital inside. But if you look at Sabah Bernam, for example, or you look at Tanjung Karang, right? You have Hospital Tanjung Karang, a very small district or very small population, but it has its own dedicated district hospital. Yet, in the urban centres with high concentrations of population, we don't have this. That's why we say that there's a big disbalance of where healthcare should be in, because we have to understand that obviously a lot of people will move into the cities. We're talking about Penang, we're talking about Johor Bahru, we're talking about Kuala Lumpur and Selangor. Everybody else from outside of state will come into these areas, these concentrated areas, and we should not be setting up clinics or healthcare centres or funding based on geographical area. Rather, now we have to move and be smart and go on population base.
I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned earlier. So if politicians aren't always, shall we say, so interested in public health investment because it takes so long to bear fruit, it doesn't always kind of yield quick turnaround in terms of public attention. Would you say that similarly then, the public themselves or ourselves aren't always so receptive to long-term campaigns, particularly on the issue of preventive health, which is a similar thing, right? Because the whole point of preventive health is working so that nothing then happens.
Well, exactly. I'm glad you brought that up, because now it's what we call desensitized. When you keep doing things over and over again or saying things over and over again, and you can see this during pandemic, right? That's why you have the pandemic fatigue. People are no longer scared of COVID. You're talking about how they're going to live with it and everything like that. But rather, what we should be focusing on is that we have to take out from the equation the enablers what are the things that are enabling people to actually lead an unhealthy lifestyle? These are the things that we should actually attack. So if you tell me that cigarette smoking is bad, my first question will be, why are we still selling it? Why are we one of the biggest producers of cigarette manufacturing in the region? Why are we headquartered here in the country? And then when you talk about things such as alcohol, if it's really bad, why are we not enforcing stricter regulations to ensure that people don't drink and drive? Right, we ensure that people who are underage don't start drinking. So we talk about desensitizing, yes, telling people what to do, but rather than putting the blame on the rakyat, telling the rakyat that look, we keep telling you guys don't want to listen because you guys are the ones who are stubborn. Rather, you should be asking yourselves, if I truly want enact change, if I truly want a healthier society, why am I not doing things that enable the society into doing good things? Why am I not removing the negative enablers from society? And that is the biggest problem that politicians really don't want to tackle head on.
So a white paper is going to be tabled in Parliament in November. What would you like to see it focus on?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of focus will be a lot on health. They'll talk about fantastic things such as this sustainability. They'll talk about how we're going to move towards the digital world, digital health, and how everything is going to be good. We're going to be leaping Malaysia towards the new millennia. We're going to be a first world country, the top rated healthcare. It's going to look fantastic on paper. But to be able to actually table a white paper, if you do not have talks or discussions with other stakeholders. Now, why do I say other stakeholders? This is KBD NKK. These are people like immigration. These are people like LHDN. All these other things. Because why? Why do I mention these names? Because you have to learn about learning how to give a total health reform that is actually holistic, that covers edge to edge. A lot of things that we try to do is so short or so narrow-minded that you only think about your own ministry, but actually when you want to talk about proper healthcare reform, it's encompassing all other sectors in the government as well. And that's why I think a white paper on healthcare reform should not be from the health minister, but it should be from the prime minister that includes everybody inside, both public and private, academics, and also all ministries involved, so that they understand that this is a healthcare reform that actually affects everybody, not just one single ministry.
So I want to touch on the issue of manpower, right? Because that's also come up quite a bit. There's been a lot of talk around contract doctors in particular. How well do you think the ministry has done in resolving these issues?
Well, I think they have done well to keep them quiet for now. It's usually short-term measures, and we love doing short-term measures, but we don't have a long-term plan. I think long-term plans, we should be talking about decentralization of human resource, which means that we should now allow hospitals to have direct hire of doctors and also other healthcare staff, because only the hospital director will be able to know how many doctors he needs. That's why we keep listening about people talking about they're overwhelmed, they're tired because they are doing too much work. But yet we see some of the nurses actually going out much earlier, or some doctors having 3-hour breaks where because their workloads are not the same. So you cannot compare district workload and also urban workload. It's completely different. And that's why I think we need to decentralize the power of human resource management. Only this can be effective. A good model for you to look at will probably be the National Health Service, where they have the power to hire and also to fire. So which means that if you're underperforming, you're a healthcare worker, you're not doing well, I mean, the hospital director should be able to fire you without having to go through 300 pages just to submit why they need to let you go. So I think this is the movements that we have to go into. And this is the type of reforms that we have to think, because only this can we actually be really sustainable.
So speaking of resources, another area that often comes up is our lack of specialist doctors, particularly in outside urban areas. What would it take to adequately address this?
Well, I think number one, you have to let the specialists choose where they want to work, right? If you look at how the health ministry works right now, the people in KL are being sent to Sabah, being sent to Sarawak. So what happens is this, right? When you push people, when there's a lot of pushing factors of specialists, you do not hold the golden card here, because the specialist has the ability to actually leave the government service and actually go to private sector. Believe me when I say this, the government does not have a problem of producing specialists. We produce enough specialists every single year. The problem is actually making them stay in public service. This is the biggest problem that the government doesn't want to resolve. And this is why I say when you talk about healthcare reform, you have to talk about how are you going to reward these specialists in the clinical settings? How are you going to make them stay? Because if you have a lot of pushing factors, making them work in places they don't want to work, rather than having them come back to KL and serving in the public sector, you push them all the way to Sabah, they quit. What are you going to get? You're going to get one less specialist, and you have to wait another 5-6 years before you can retrain another one to replace that specialist. So I think this is why if you're on tabling white paper, when you talk about healthcare reform, you have to get all the stakeholders on all levels to actually come and sit down and talk with you.
So in closing, we have a minute left with you. And today, of course, is World Health Day. The year's theme is Our Planet, Our Health. Can you close off by telling us some of the ways that the healthcare system is tied to the climate crisis?
Well, I think whatever happens in the climate, you have to remember that it affects health. I mean, you talk about landslides, right? People will say, how does that actually affect health? Well, if you get hurt and the changes occurs due to flooding and all these things, you talk about communicable diseases, leptospirosis, all of these things that happens because of climate change actually burden the healthcare system. People must understand that there's a very big tie. No matter what happens to you, as long as it touches your body, it actually involves the healthcare system. So that's why I think you do have to address all these things. When you talk about healthcare reform, you have to address things such as climate change as well, because environment is actually a big part of public health. And that big sector needs to be looked as an overreaching. You have to look at it from an eagle's eye to ensure that you address every single problem. Because if not, you've got to keep burdening your healthcare system if you don't have completely holistic healthcare reform.
Dr. Farhan, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Associate Professor Dr. Farhan Risley, Public Health Medicine Specialist, weighing in on improvements that need to be made to our healthcare system. After this, we'll be talking about health literacy. Send your thoughts our way. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? We'll look at your messages after this and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're marking World Health Day by discussing a couple of things. Earlier we looked at the importance of getting our healthcare systems right, the lessons that we've learned from the last 2 years. And now we're going to be looking at health literacy and why it's important for us really to have the right information and know how to advocate for ourselves. But we would like to hear from you. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we move on to our next guest, I think we have time for some messages.
Yes, so let's start with Daniel, who says, I totally agree with the doctor. That was Dr. Farhan, who we spoke to earlier. We should start with a few things to revamp healthcare. Firstly, a national healthcare policy. Secondly, medical record alignment. Third, easy way, just ask what Singapore does and copy, which, you know, that comes up a lot. I don't think that's necessarily the way, but this issue of medical records is coming up quite a bit.
Yes, and I think it's one of those things that both on the face of it seem simple, but in practice, apparently, it's quite difficult to implement. And I do think that aligning medical records, making them easily transferable, easily sort of accessible, is part of making a system that is, what's the word, people-friendly, people-centric?
Mm. I would actually like to add on also to your question earlier, or our question rather, about how health, how knowledgeable about health Malaysians are, to actually extend a question that we asked Dr. Farhan earlier, which is, how would you grade our healthcare system? Because at some point, all of us have been in contact with it, whether public or private. And I'd be curious to know, because I think that, especially depending on how often you have to engage with the healthcare system and under what context, where, all these things are going to change the grade.
Speaking of how knowledgeable we are about health, Charlotte says, judging from our national favorites in terms of food, there's definitely much room for improvement. That said, I think we've improved a lot collectively, generally in the awareness of diet options, lifestyle, just not enough yet. Most of us are not really conscious about what exactly we put in our bodies when we make decisions about food or how deprived our bodies are of exercise. We selectively believe in fancy products and ways to say quote-unquote healthy, yet refuse to believe in the important basics, a balanced diet, whole foods and staying active.
This goes back to what we were talking about earlier with boredom, which is the fact that those things that we're talking about and that you're mentioning, Charlotte, that are really very much key to our health, balanced diet, whole foods, staying active, they're rather dull. And so when you have somebody promising you something fantastic and easy and colorful, you know, it's quite easy to think, okay, yeah, maybe that's what I should be doing, as opposed to thinking, yeah, I'm just going to continue plugging away, exercising 5 to 7 days a week, eating well. You know, those things aren't necessarily always the most appealing. I would also add on, though, that most national food favorites are not healthy. So just to be fair to us, I don't think that any country around the world is like, you know what we love? We really, really love porridge. Like, very few people say that. So in all fairness, I just wanted to put that out there.
And, you know, it might be easy to overlook the importance of information or knowledge in something as simple as the food we eat or how to exercise, right? But I think in a weird way, the more information we now have access to with the internet, the easier it becomes to misunderstand things or take things at face value, not ask the right questions. And that's where this notion of health literacy comes in. So that's what we're going to be talking about next. Do keep those thoughts coming. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to discuss this further is Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at the University of Malaya. Dr. Adina, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So to start off with, why is health literacy important? What aspects does it cover?
All right. So current healthcare system, ours included, actually put a high demand on our patient. And they want our patient to have high literacy skills. For example, now, even in Klinik Kesihatan, you have to make an appointment before you can go. And most of these appointments are being done online or through an app. And when you went there, you have to know where to register. And you have to know what documents you have to bring to register. And then you have to fill in all the forms that they've put across to you. And then you wait. And this is all before you see the doctor, Shamila and Lin. So when you see the doctor, then there are new treatment that are not clearly beneficial. So sometimes patients are being put in a position where they have to share that decision with the doctor. So that they have to evaluate whether this treatment will be good or not good for them. So all these are the facts of life at the moment. So healthcare system are becoming more complex. Patients need to be highly health literate to be able to navigate through this healthcare system to get the proper healthcare that they need. Yeah. So if you ask me what aspects health literacy covers, so basically there are many definitions of health literacy, but the one that you usually use said that it's a degree to which the individuals have the capacity to obtain, process, evaluate and apply those information to make healthcare decisions. So there are four main domains. So access, understand, appraise and apply. So if they can't do any of this, then they are deemed to be not highly literate. Yeah.
Right. And because the system has become more complex, because there are all these differing needs, and it's likely to just continue changing, right, as time goes on. How informed are Malaysians right now when it comes to health literacy? And have we seen this change a lot or evolve over time?
All right. So actually in 2015, the government has this health and morbidity survey. I don't know whether you're aware of that they do almost every year. So in 2015, they decided to measure the health literacy for the first time. Then that was atrocious. Only 6.6% of our citizen actually has adequate health literacy. But in 2019, which was the last NHMS, they actually changed the tool that they use to measure. And at that point, they found about 30% of us, 1 in 3, they quoted as 1 in 3 of us has limited health literacy. So that's much better than the previous years. But I would take it with a grain of salt, Lynn, because of the way they measured it. So we have to wait for the next NHMS to see whether we have improved from the 1/3. But to tell you the truth, across the world, in the United States, they are also quoting about 36%. In Canada, it's even higher. 55% has limited health literacy. in the European Union, about 1 in 2 has limited health literacy. So it's a global problem. I'm glad that we are now looking at it, and I'm glad that you all are also talking about it because we do need to address it. Yeah.
So the thing is, self-assessment is difficult, right? How do we know if we're actually equipped with enough knowledge or asking the right questions when it comes to understanding health and healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what we don't know, right? Yeah. So that is the problem. So this is where, as researchers, we would like it that the healthcare system becomes friendlier to the low literate patient. So there is this concept of a health literate healthcare organization. And this is also being put forth by the United States. But the Taiwanese has run off with it. So almost all of their healthcare systems, like their hospitals, go for this certification to say that they are a health literate healthcare organization. So what you need to be called that is that you have to have a leader in that system that is very aware about the needs of the health literacy needs of patients. And they have to put that within their mission, their structure, in their operations, in everything that they do, in the planning, evaluation measures. So they have to put health literacy front and center in whatever they do. So because it's a balance, so if the patient has low literacy level, but the healthcare system bring their complexity low, so you actually don't have so much impact to their health. But if the healthcare system maintained to be very complex, but you have more and more patients that has low health literacy level, they can't manage it. Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about this from the point of view of the patient, but I wanted to ask about doctors, because as you point out, the system also needs to acknowledge and accommodate, right, when people have low literacy in health. So are doctors generally, or nurses even, you know, because front-facing, right, generally equipped or trained to do that, to be able to look at somebody, talk to them and go, okay, I might need to adapt the way that we approach this or talk to this patient?
So there is a concept of like patient-centered care. So meaning, and that has been, the notion of trying to deliver patient-centered care has been accepted by even our Ministry of Health. But when we interact with patients, it is very difficult to say that the concept of health literacy is not something that they understand. So a lot of our healthcare workers will say things like, oh, dia tak faham, their education level is low. But that's not true, because I know of doctors that don't go for screening or doctors who are taking supplements, are very bad about taking care of their own health, or even PhD holders that don't know how to take care of their health. So education level does not equate to health literacy level. So the notion of health literacy may be something new, but they know that when people don't understand the importance of health, they don't do certain things that the healthcare system want them to do. So the nurses, the doctors know that, but they probably don't know that it's related to health literacy. And I think more importantly, they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to support this patient with low health literacy level. Yeah.
We'll continue our conversation on health literacy after this with Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at UM. But keep your thoughts coming. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:50. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we are closing off our conversation on World Health Day by focusing on health literacy. And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? Keep those thoughts coming. And we're now continuing our conversation with Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at University of Malaya. Dr. Adina, to pick up on our conversation earlier, what are the main factors that contributes to one's level of health literacy?
Okay, so when they do the studies to look for the level of health literacy level in the population, they also look at the associated factors. So that's the only way that we can tell whether this related to the health literacy level. So in Malaysia, for the 2019 National Health and Mobility Survey, they found that limited health literacy, which means low health literacy, is more likely in the older age group. So about 68% of them has low health literacy. Of course, people with lower education level, which we talked about, but we know also with high education level they can have, but more prominent in the low education level, and also the lower household income. And this type of factors has been seen across the world as well, Shamila. So in US, the elderly, the minorities, the non-whites, the people who don't complete high school, people who speak in language other than English, and people who live in poverty. So much so that the World Health Organization categorized health literacy as part of social determinant of health. Meaning, if you have, they tend, low, limited health literacy tend to affect our most vulnerable. You know, our vulnerable populations are the one that are going to have low health literacy level. So that is the reason why it's an important area to talk about.
You touched on this earlier, but I wanted to expand. I mean, how does having health literacy contribute to how we can advocate for ourselves, and more importantly, in some ways, for others when we're in the patient setting?
Okay, so... when I did my study, my PhD was on health literacy. We managed to interview patients with limited health literacy and find out what's happening. So I found this new phenomenon called the push factor. So in Malaysia, we don't have the people with adequate health literacy, they look for information themselves. But with the one with low health literacy, they don't have the motivation to look for this information. So what happened is that people tell them information. Their friends at the kedai kopi tell them, okay, oh, you have diabetes, take this juice, you know, or you have cancer, come, I bring you to this BOMO. So people push information to them, and because they don't have the ability to evaluate this information, and they trust the people who give them the information, they believe it. So then so what I'm trying to say is that if we improve the health literacy level of the community, so the person who's telling this patient with low health literacy or giving out the information have high health literacy level, they will not share wrong information with their friends or family. So if we improve the health literacy level in the community, we will help and support those that have low health literacy level, because some of them we can't help because they have limited education level. They cannot access a lot of the information, Lynn, because a lot of the information are in English. So if they can't understand English, how can they understand those health information? So I got an example of a 60-year-old woman who lives with the grandchildren. So the grandchildren can read information and tell her the right information. So she... her health literacy level is improved by the community, by the people around her. So it's essentially important that we improve everyone's health literacy level.
So then what are the challenges in communicating health literacy on a large public scale here?
I don't think it's sexy enough, isn't it? Health literacy is like, oh, you know, like, who wants to talk about that? I think our stakeholders and our policymakers still have doubts about the importance of health literacy. I think in our country, we are very new into looking at health literacy. Like I say, in NHMS, only in 2015, we start to measure it. And now I can see a few researchers are looking into it. So until we got more information, the policymaker maybe don't want to put a lot of investment into the area because there's a lot to be done. But I'm pushing it slowly. Another area that I'm looking into now is digital health literacy, because I think now more and more people get the information from the internet. So I think that's another area that we need to look at.
So to pick that up, how has the internet and social media shaped the way we access and process information related to health?
So here I want to introduce another big survey, which is the MCMC, Internet User Survey. I think they do it also yearly. But in 2017, I think the KKM managed to ask them to look into health information seeking online. So last year in 2020, they found 72% of the internet users use it to look for information. But they only stopped at that level. But in 2017, they further asked, how many of these are for health? And it's about 77% out of those that look for information, look for health information. And the top things that they look for are symptoms, like I have abdominal pain, what is this? Second is like the healthcare providers. They want to know where should they go. I want to look for a gynecologist or things like that. Another thing, wait, I'm looking. I have it here. And then the healthcare tips, as well as the medication, information on medication. So we are using it, but the digital health literacy level, probably not at the level that we want it to be.
We have about 2 minutes left. The pandemic has exposed a lot of challenges when it comes to health communication, health information. What are some of the major gaps that you've seen and how can they be addressed?
So I don't think we did too badly. At least our information are consistent. I'm comparing us to US now, but the daily press conference. I mean, the KKM decided to do that, which I think is part of the playbook for a pandemic, which they stick to it. I'm quite glad that they did. The only thing that I would like to say is just that languages. I wish that we use more languages, and I'm not talking just the three main languages, talking about the Orang Asli languages, the Dusun languages, all our partners in the East Malaysia. It's because when we start to try and communicate in their language, then we start to understand what health meant to them, because health might mean different thing. You know, the word vaccine might not translate directly to their language. So we need to know what it is that they think about when they talk about infectious disease and things like that. Another thing is about two-way communication. So I'm glad that certain people, you know, like Prof. Adiba and Dato' Jamilah decided to set up a portal or a way for people to ask questions, because health information should never be one way. You never process information one way. Whenever you get information, you want to ask, I don't understand this part, I don't understand this part. So it should always be two ways. And I think that is where government can improve on. Set up call lines that works or just a portal that works where people can ask questions and get answers.
Dr. Adina, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, speaking to us about the importance of health literacy and the knock-on effects it can have when, essentially we don't focus on it enough. Share your thoughts with us. Do you think Malaysians are knowledgeable about health? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll get to your messages after this. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.